Technorama episode 422 for January 7th. Adam's Lie. They make up everything.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
What?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for January 7, 2015. Did I write it right this time? This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time either way. Or is it either way? Either? Either. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and either with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig? Craig? Did we lose him on Skype?
No, I'm muted.
Also asleep at the wheel.
What? I think 2015. The word we're looking for is neither. Not either or either. Yeah. Neither.
We have neither available in the show.
Right.
And joining us in the studio, IRL, is Mark the Encapsulated One. How are you, Mark?
Oh, sorry. I was AFK for a second there.
I can hit mute buttons up here all day.
I'm doing good. I came all the way to Phoenix because I figured that was the only way I was going to get in the show again.
Other than being at Dragon Con.
Well, I wasn't on the show this year for Dragon Con.
Oh.
I was in the audience doing all the laughing.
We had overflow. We even had to put John Bell down in front for a while.
You know he's got a new book out? Yeah. It's an audio book,
yes,
too.
He narrated himself.
It was great.
An IRL book?
Exactly.
And one more time, we have Julie joining us in the studio as well.
I'm here. I'm not asleep.
I'm not quite dead yet.
At least one of us is awake. That's good. That's all it takes to make a show, right?
One, yes. One. Otherwise, if nobody's talking, the listener usually goes away.
That's a whole, you know, John Cage memorial show. four minutes, 23 seconds of silence.
And I think based on silence, we'll go on with this show. Coming up in this episode, come on, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, play. There it is. Coming up in this episode, we have What Your Robot Does, Star Wars Complaints, imagine that, and jokes that can make you smarter. Listen, and you might learn.
We should be geniuses by now.
Look, at The Weird Show, we don't have the answers.
Heck no.
But we sure do love those questions. The Weird Show is a weekly roundup of strange news, odd views, and bizarre ideas, rearranged and packed together with open-mindedness, inquisitiveness, and just a touch of humor, all packed into a one-hour audio podcast that comes out just about every Saturday morning. Get it at theweirdshow.com.
And break out of your normal reality, at least for a little while.
This is Richard Garriott,
Lord British,
private space explorer. You're with Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Chuck and Craig at Technorama.
Well, that's always fun. We threw in a free promo for you, Mark.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. It's a very old one, I realize, too. I haven't done a new one for a while. That just means the show's been around for a while, right? That's it.
It was on Wax Cylinder. Yeah, that was helpful. Thanks. It took a while to convert that.
I knew that they left one of those Wax Cylinder players around the studio somewhere here.
Mike leaves everything around here.
I think you can get one as Wax Cylinder players with USB nowadays.
You know, I actually have a Wax Cylinder. I don't have a player for it, but I actually do have one.
Do you know what song it is on?
No, I don't, because I can't play it. I did download a bunch of Wax Cylinder recordings, and then when I played them, I just realized this doesn't make any sense, Because I'm playing, you know, stuff on MP3, a compressed format, against something that was on a wax cylinder. And I should be really playing this through some rocks or something like that. To really get the whole thing properly.
Oh, dude, it sounds much better at 192 K. Like, really?
Hey, get you a paper cup and a needle, and you can listen to them.
Either that or a high-end sound system, like 5.1 sound system, just to make it completely ridiculous. It's 5.1 mono. Exactly.
The background noise.
Welcome to the...
Yeah, what? he broke up and left.
Yeah.
Let's do the history thing. On this day in history for January 7th, 2015. This is January 7th. It's the, yes, 7th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. The math is easy this time of year. There are 358 days remaining until the end of 2015. It was on this date in 1610 that Galileo Galilei makes his first observation of the four Galilean moons, Ganymede, Callisto, Io, and Europa, although he's not able to distinguish the last two until the following day. They have to come out from behind the planet.
I was thinking the drink worn off.
Take it, Craig. Yeah.
On January 7th, 1785, Frenchman Jean-Pierre Blanchard and American John Jeffries traveled from Dover, England to Calais, France in a gas balloon.
That's about as best French as I've heard you done.
You brought up the great French for me. I'm really impressed.
Oui.
Mark, it's your turn.
That same date in 1835, the HMS Beagle drops anchor off the I was going to say Kronos. Or
I thought it was two. The Klingons live there, apparently.
They've rewritten time again.
Julie.
Okay, in 1894, William Kennedy Dickinson receives a patent for motion picture film. Ooh, neat.
Someone had to supply the film, I guess.
It was just still picture film before that.
Yep. 11-1 years ago today, the distress signal CQD is established, only to be replaced 2 years later by SOS. I'm going to have to update my phone.
What does CQD stand for?
I had never knew. We'll look it
come
up on
quickly,
Wikipedia.
Come danger, I think. Something like that.
Yeah, come quick. Danger. The first transatlantic telephone service is established from New York to London, United Kingdom, in 88 years ago today.
And the first call was, hey, you've just won a cruise. On January 7th of 1954, the first public demonstration of a machine translation system is held in New York at the head office of IBM. The first thing it says is, I win.
Surveyor 7, the last spacecraft in the Surveyor series, lifts off from Launch Complex 36A, Cape Canaveral, on this date in 1968.
That same date in 1985, Japanese Aerospace Exploration Agency launches Sagakaki, Japan's first interplanetary spacecraft and first deep space probe to be launched by any country other than the United States or Soviet Union. Happy birthday goes out on this date to Scottish-Canadian engineer and creator of the Universal Standard Time, curse him, Sanford Fleming, born on this date in 1827.
And also born on this date in 1873, Adolf Zucker, Hungarian film producer, co-founded Paramount Pictures.
Awesome.
Once they had film, they were able to do that. The Russian engineer and astronaut Valen Kubazov would have been 80 this year, but he's not.
American astronaut Frederick D. Gregory turns 74 today.
Also turning 74 today, English chemist, Nobel Prize laureate John E. Walker. No, not that Johnny Walker. I knew anybody was going to jump on that.
Chemist, eh?
His middle initial is E, as in Egbert.
Or English, man.
And actor. I'm sorry, is it my turn?
Yes.
Actress Aaron. Actress Erin Gray, yowza, turned 65.
Wow, for 65, awesome.
And finally, actor, producer, and director Nicolas Cage turns into another window, so I can't see how old he is. But that's okay, because he's older today, on January 7th of 2015.
I was making he's 1 year a older quick show previously. Change, and I accidentally popped a window right over the show notes.
Can you tell I do live radio, where things happen like that all the time?
And I wanted to make
a year older
than he was last year. Cut it out, man. I just wanted to make a special mention of Sadako Sasaki, who was
Saki.
This came up in the on this day, but it wasn't a maybe it was a birthday. She was 2 years old. She is the only survivor that I know of, that at least Wikipedia knows about, who survived both the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs.
Oh, that's right. They took some survivors, some refugees to different cities, and one of them was
right. One of them was Nagasaki. So she's over there getting cured for being blown out a window in Hiroshima and nearly dead. And then she gets more. She eventually did pass away in 1955 of leukemia, which a lot of people got leukemia. A lot of the kids did anyway.
So reason.
It was a very fascinating story, and I'm leaving the link in the show notes for you to follow if you care to follow up. I just thought it was a fascinating thing then went, wow, that's pretty wild.
It is.
And that's the way it was on this day in history for January 7th, 2015. Long, long after the music is gone.
I
do want to throw something else about that, because I remember it kind of started off when I watched the Wolverine movie,
yes,
where, you know, at the beginning he's going into the, he's in the underground cell and the bomb goes off, you know, over, was it Hiroshima or Nagasaki, one of the two. And I'm thinking, wow, it kind of looked like it went off above the ground in the movie. And I went and looked and I found out that the bomb cannot hit the ground. If it hits the ground and blows up, it contaminates the ground. If it goes off above the ground a certain height, then the ground isn't contaminated. That's how they're able to rebuild the cities.
Well, that was awfully thoughtful of them. They're building a bomb that won't destroy everything forever.
Just a little while.
Just a little while.
I understand, there's more destructive force too when you explode it in the air.
Well, yeah, I'm sure it is, because it's all, yeah. But anyway, I just thought it was fascinating because it was something I never thought about. You know, I think about a bomb hitting the ground and, you know, blowing up, but yeah, it's not quite like that.
Let's talk about some news, since we happen to have some here just conveniently laying around.
Good news, crybabies.
So
look what's on the floor.
Wow, I didn't realize I had a little hiss audio artifact in there that I'm going to have to clean up. Question for you. If your robot buys illegal drugs, have you committed a crime?
Did you program it to buy illegal drugs?
Not necessarily. According to this article, a group of Swiss artists recently set a bot free on the dark net. I guess that's the one that Vader frequents. Allowing it to purchase whatever it could with bitcoins. Among other weird things it bought were a few ecstasy pills and a fake Hungarian passport.
I wonder what the name on that was.
For a moment, I thought it said fake Hogwarts passport. But my brain tended to munge Hungarian and passport into Hogwarts. But now an attorney asked whether the artist could be arrested under the law as it currently stands. University of Washington law professor Ryan Kalo, who studies the legal implications of robots, has a piece on Forbes about the thought experiment he did last year on this topic. At the time, he was just musing about what would happen if a robot bought something illegal online and mailed it. Why do suddenly visions of Bender go through my mind?
look at the first comment.
The comment
down a little bit. Look at
it's a picture of Bender. Imagine it would depend entirely on the nature of the illicit substances. I did not see the comments earlier.
Is this like if you had a robot and you're like, send me a present, give me a gift, send me a surprise.
Yeah.
And robot's like, I know what he would like. Ecstasy.
Doesn't it come down to the fundamental question about what is a robot? Is it a possession of the owner, or does it have its own autonomy? Because once it has its own autonomy, you shouldn't be held responsible for it, just like you're not held responsible for your kids once they reach autonomy, right? At least I think that's how it works.
Well, I think it's more akin to, what if your dog commits a crime?
Dogs don't have autonomy, so they are beholden to their owners. Hey, now, if they
see my dog act on his own, I didn't have any influence.
You're still responsible, though. Like if your dog trashes your neighbor's garbage,
or if your kid trashes a neighbor's garbage,
right? Or buys ecstasy online.
If your dog buys ecstasy,
that was the next suggestion at Amazon. I'm just following links.
Hey, officer, I swear my robot bought it.
Well, that actually could be used as a defense. An interesting way to do it is you make sure all your robots buy all your illicit substances. No one will be charged with a crime because it wasn't the robot.
Is that why it's a crime to buy it and to use it?
Well, that's
or
also
possession so they can, or Like they have all their bases covered.
I don't know drug laws that well.
I think a lot of cases what they do is they build a bunch of laws that are likely to all happen at once. So that way they get more ways to prosecute. You know, that's why possession is one thing. Possession with intent to sell is another thing.
Right. So if they can't get you for using it, they can get you for possessing it.
Right, right. And then if they do catch you using it, then they've got a whole bunch of things they can pile on top of you.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, is a web bot a robot? That's a whole other kind of question.
True.
Or is it just a tool? Like, is your web browser a separate entity? No. So you can't say your web browser is the thing that actually bought it. You are the one that clicked it. You know, I didn't buy this, officer. It was totally my wallet that bought this.
Yeah. Hey, officer, I swear, I just told my robot what I liked. I didn't tell him to go buy it.
Yeah.
Here's the quote from Ryan Kalo's paper. It says, given that criminal law commonly requires mens rea, which is Latin for intending mind, it would seem the recipient of the package, even if she programmed the bot herself, might not be held criminally liable. After all, she intended to surprise herself, not to purchase a contraband. This and other examples of emergent behavior create the interesting prospect of crimes without perpetrators, or so I argue.
So you're saying there is a chance.
A snowball's chance. That's interesting.
Well, I mean, I wonder if people are going to say, well, I didn't BitTorrent that. My robot did.
That's right.
And yeah. You know, the robot can't be prosecuted, but it could be shut down, I suppose.
Oh.
You know. Oh. Do you have to disassemble the program?
Can you shut down a sentient?
Well, again,
it'd be like putting down your dog.
Well, but even more though.
But once, the dog isn't sentient.
Once it's retrieved autonomy, which is usually...
Or autonomy. I'm mixing the two terms.
I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be sentient as long as it makes its own decisions. Technically, that's sentient.
Okay.
But,
yeah.
I mean, I did AI research for a number of years, so this is kind of some of the stuff that I used to think about.
Boy, we got the right person tonight.
I didn't finish that degree, but sure.
I read a book on law.
Yeah.
I had a friend that read a book on law.
But there's a lot of interesting questions about, you know, what is the barrier and where do robots actually live? The work I did was all in software agents, and software agents are intended to work on your behalf. They're intended to have some autonomy under the direction of their creator. But obviously, like in this case, the direction can be pretty vague. But if you told a friend and said, go out and get me a surprise, I happen to like, among other things, ecstasy, Hungarian passports, and chocolate. And he came back with, you know, the ecstasy. Am I going to be charged with essentially a conspiracy to commit a crime? And I kind of wonder if that's what's happening in this case, is essentially if the robot is somehow deemed to be independent, then you are still liable because it's a conspiracy that you weren't specific enough in your instructions. Now, what if it bought it accidentally? I don't know. It was like it was looking for ecstasy, the book, and accidentally bought ecstasy, the pill. Or
because it couldn't see the picture that it was clearly different.
Yeah, well.
I just wanted porn, not drugs.
That's right. That makes it all better.
I wanted tickets to the Ecstasy Gentlemen's Club. Come on.
Well, there's gentlemen there. And yeah. I like the fact that it's kind of a question that we are already coming into. You know, this is welcome 2015. The world has changed inevitably. Now suddenly all of it's different.
Thank you, Isaac Asimov.
And when your car drives you to the porn store, remember, it's the car's fault, not yours.
Let's go on to our next good news. We have a story from Gizmodo that the Smithsonian is restoring the original USS Enterprise model. The one they used in the 1966-7-8 show.
Oh, wait, you don't mean like the Model 1 that they actually flew into space?
No. The USS, Mark, I give this one to you. Would you read this?
Sure. How much do you want me to read here? I can read it all.
Down to the quote.
The USS Enterprise is, in popular imagination, a futuristic spacecraft. Well, spaceship is what they use, sorry. The actual USS Enterprise model used on the Star Trek show is, in reality, a 50-year-old creaker that has endured at least one misguided new paint job. Uh-oh. The Smithsonian is hard at work restoring the model, though, and they've even got the National Zoo's vet techs involved.
What?
The zoo? What?
In an interview with Trek Corps, the Smithsonian's conservator, Margaret Vicomp, dropped some fascinating hints about how the restoration is going. The model was donated to the Smithsonian 5 years after the original show was canceled. It's a new 5-year journey, I guess. And it had been on display in the Air and Space Museum.
Cool.
Earlier this year, they started to restore the sagging, stress-fractured model. Is that William Shatner? Anyway, they're restoring the model in earnest, boldly going where no conservator has gone before. One of the first things conservators did.
I'm sorry, I was going to say, I think you can insert any of the actors, original actors.
There's going to be whales here.
Stress fractures. Yeah, I've seen Shatner's new show. Well, I guess it's old now. It's new to me. I cut the cord. But there's a Shatner project out there where he's restoring his house. And he looks just as angry as anybody.
Like, I think I saw part of it on YouTube or something.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's Shatner being Shatner for Shatner's sake.
Now what would be cool if he was Shatner playing Kirk, playing owning Shatner? The Enterprise, and they're restoring it. Now that would be a show I'd watch.
Wow! So they
lost me.
They used these vet techs to use an X-ray on this thing, and it looks like an old, like 1600s painting. This thing is cracked all over the place.
I think they used that special effect in the show. That's when they zap something, right? With an X-ray?
It's breaking apart.
Just coming apart of the seams, Captain.
Still trying to figure out how the zoo works. Did they make the paint out of monkey feces?
It was their X-ray. It says one of the first things the conservators did was bring in X-ray vet techs from the the National Zoo. White Camp explains to Trek Corps, the Enterprise has been X-rayed before, but that was done by sending it out for analysis. Oh, they're insourcing now. This is an opportunity since the Zoological Park team had a portable radiography unit. I read radiography right.
I think I read units right.
To bring the equipment in-house and save us the trouble of having to move the model an additional time. It was really interesting. You can get a good sense of the interior. Wow. Oh, they had an interior on this thing?
Well,
all of the little penny nails and things like that. That kind of interior.
Yeah.
Well, it has a structure to it, you know, a backbone structure to it.
Yeah.
I'm excited to get some of that imagery back. It comes in very large files that are specific to the scanning system that they have, so they don't convert them to JPEG, I guess.
I got a great idea.
Yes.
What would be cool if that when they go to restore this, they take handwritten notes from Shatner and all the living actors.
Time capsule.
Put it in here as a time capsule. Yes.
Yep.
Oh, I thought you were going to write on the X-rays. My room was here.
Yeah, with an arrow pointing.
This is where the green girl got it.
My quarters.
You know what? I think they could finance the entire operation by selling like the photographs or poster sized versions of the X-ray of the Enterprise.
Sure. Nerds would buy that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Hey, wait a minute. I'd pay a couple bucks to put a card and a time capsule inside the Enterprise.
Well, that's you.
Ooh. Hey. Yeah, just to like a little 1-inch by 2-inch piece of paper, like a fortune cookie thing. Yeah,
but then we got to strap it to a rocket and send it into space for 5 years.
Yeah. Actually, when I first saw this, I went, wow, that looks great. Then I thought, wait a minute. Star Trek's it's not even real because they didn't retrofit this one with the, you know,
with the new nacelles and things.
Yeah. Oh.
No, this is
fake.
This TOS, man.
Fake.
Put it right beside the you know, the Bigfoot and the giant octopus of doom
at the Smithsonian.
Yeah.
Hey, but wouldn't y'all pay a couple bucks to put a card inside?
Sure,
of it?
I think that's a cool idea. Craig, write them.
I'm going to. I'm gonna find them and give them my idea.
Okay, here's where you can write to the Smithsonian.
Hold on. Followed the link. There's the X-rays with the nails and stuff.
Oh, okay. Cool. Here's where you can send your money.
Send your comments to technorama@chuckchat.com.
Yeah, send your money there.
I like how you just blow me off.
Because I had a better idea for money.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll write your comments on some pieces of paper or something, probably.
Put them in a box for a few years.
Yeah.
Make sure they're vintage. Yeah.
We have the listener birthday calendar before we go into our next break. We have, January 8th is Elvis. Need I say more?
The actual Elvis?
The actual Elvis. Wow. Presley.
The man who doesn't need a second
name.
With
an exclamation point.
Is that what Presley translates into? That's the emoji for Presley.
Ah, okay. And January 9th is Lingo from the Brit and Yankee podcast. I think they know each other, or they had birthdays, or they're the same age, something like that. Right?
He knows Elvis?
Yes, he knows Elvis. We're going to take another quick break. We will be back with... Whoops.
And we're back.
And we're back. You know, we should just do that sometime.
Oiled machine.
Well oiled. We're using whale oil.
Mama always said Technorama was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're gonna get. Get away from me, you geek!
Hi, this is Erin Gray, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
I got a dead audio clip on the deck.
Somebody sweep that up.
I'll have that edited in post. Don't worry, you won't hear anything about it because there was like a 15-second click, click, nothing happened. Click, click, nothing happened.
So like but a 30-second description?
But you got to cut out what you just said.
Yeah, okay, otherwise I'm lying. Now listen closely. Everything I say is a lie. All right, this one was a great picture, speaking of old things. Isaac Asimov, well, we should have the Remember When clip thing going. That'd be funnier, right? Track 7, sure. Go.
I didn't know your system was voice operated.
It's not. I have to stand here and wait to push the pause button. And
we
remember,
had 2015. Hey, we had 2015 and everything goes to pot.
Did your robot buy it?
The show is 10 years old and just can't hold its liquor anymore.
X-ray it.
Y2K caught up with
it. I saw this come up on Scott Sigler's Google feed today and I said, that must go in the show today. That is definitely Technorama material. It's a picture of Isaac Asimov complete with his lamb chop sideburns holding up a Trash 80 pocket computer, which looks like a big wide calculator. It says, a few years ago, the idea of computer you could put in your pocket was just science fiction. Yeah. Today, just $169.95 buys a Radio Shack TRS-80 pocket computer, and that's a fact.
What does it do?
It computes, of course. The like size of your pocket.
Does
now,
it calculate?
This is the part right out of our old Remember When segment. Back when computers filled an entire room, Isaac Asimov was writing about computers you could hold in your hand. Radio Shack's Trash 80 pocket computer turned my dreams into reality. Shh. I'm narrating here. Now I can take the power of a true computer with me wherever I go, says Asimov. Like he's writing novels on this thing. You can't even thumb type on this baby.
His voice should be different, though, because he always mispronounced robot as rubbit.
Rubbit.
So. Rubbit. That's right.
The Trash 80 pocket computer is programmable with BASIC. Isaac, however, would rather write novels on his one-line display, I'm sure. Then programs. If you're like me, and I know I am, you'll want to get the low-cost interface that lets you use Radio Shack's ready-to-run programs. There are programs for engineering, finances, and statistics, even real estate and aviation. Oh, boy.
How well does it fly?
We just saw that story about United putting iPads in all the cockpits. Why didn't they do this?
Yeah.
What's wrong with those people?
What can it possibly do for aviation?
Well, you see, actually, I was just at the Computer History Museum in San Jose or Mountain View, California.
We need to go back, Craig.
And the thing that the calculator, the Babbage calculator, which is there now, is to calculate logarithms, right? And in aviation, there's all kinds of curves involved in aviation. Mm-hmm. And that's probably what they were talking about here. It's just a simple way to calculate those curves. Cool. I've got maybe fuel usage. I've got so much fuel. I'm burning at this rate. I want to climb to this height. Do I have enough fuel to do it? That sort of thing.
By the time you calculate all that, oh, crap, I'm out of fuel.
Now explain to me what it can do for real estate.
Well, it's all about the mortgage.
It's for sale or not.
That's where you post it on the internet, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Wait, there's additional pieces you can put on here. With the Trash Eating Pocket Computer, you can hold the future in the palm of your hand.
If you have really big hands.
Add our $80 mini set. Add our $80 mini set 9 cassette recorder and a cassette interface for another $30.
Oh, geez. Hmm.
Or a cassette interface with a built-in printer for $127.95. They're all close to your nearby Radio Shack store, dealer, or computer center. Cut out this little thing, fill in your address, and send it into Texas, and we'll send you a catalog.
We should mail it.
See if they're still there.
Radio Shack still exists. So.
Yeah, but I don't know if they're still at the same office in Fort Worth, Texas. Listeners, let us know.
Knock on their door and find out.
I don't remember exactly, but I don't think Isaac Asimov ever conjectured about the internet very much.
No, it was one of the things he missed.
When he said computers, it was like this big thinking machine, but it was never connected to other computers.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the robots did not do the pole dancing of what we see
that
on the next image.
Is something else. Hey,
that's disturbing.
But wait a minute. But before you move on, I got to tell you, Julie, you were asking, what can you do with this? Well, I had not this, but I had a Sharp EL5500, which was very similar. It had a kind of like a keyboard looking thing. It actually looked much like this. With a one-line display, but you could program BASIC in it, you know, 10 print, 10 20, whatever, and go through it, go there online. Well, I could set it on my desk at school, and the teacher would never question it. You know, it's not like having a piece of paper out during a test. So, what I did was,
is he cheated?
I used RIM statements and wrote my answers to the test.
He had crib notes.
Oh my gosh!
So I could just scroll through it, and when she walked by, just look. She never paid attention to it.
And goes
I only
from
did that once.
Goes
did
from new cool technology to ways to cheat at things in 5 seconds now.
It was called hacking.
Yeah, some exams they won't let you bring your programmable calculator either because you can just type in the answers instead of an application.
Yeah,
I think you should be taking your exams with a pencil that they provide on paper they've provided, and all your technological wizardry should go away, especially your glasses. Gosh.
Usually,
I know I charge just pencil.
Especially your glasses.
all technology.
We brought in these lamp whale oil lamps again just for you and candles.
They would look like all the monkeys from 2001, you know, taking the pencils and, you know.
I took the GRE this semester, and I couldn't bring my water bottle in to the testing room. It was their pencil, their scrap paper.
You may have encoded
paper.
Answers in the water molecule.
Water clearly is the answer to everything.
Had to wait for the break to go get a drink of water.
Was it smart water? That might have been the problem.
Yeah.
My water's answering my test for me.
Speaking of technologies, of which we've been doing, there are 6 technologies in this next article that have always been just 2 years away, as we're so fond of quoting, or at least the media is.
Especially the time machine. It keeps moving 2 years ahead.
It's almost here, guys. Flying cars, jetpacks, hoverboards, or so we've been promised. It seems that these technologies are always just 2 years away. At least that's what the media keeps telling us. So today, this article from paleofuture.gizmodo talks about the promises for the near future, things that haven't quite arrived yet, that we're so desperate to believe that they're just over the horizon and really wish the horizon would stop moving.
You know, you really got to find this article 2 years from now, so it's all right current.
That would help.
And actually, most of these are already here.
Well, if it's like any good blogging software, just change the date to 2 years ago.
That's right. Retro post.
So, top on the list is, of course, flying cars.
Which we've had for about 2 decades.
Well, if Avery Brooks has been waiting for them, where are the flying cars?
Well, I mean, we've actually had flying cars. The problem is most people are really bad pilots and don't have any money.
Well, there's the Avril car, which actually was around years ago, but only got about 4 feet off the ground. Technically, it was a flying car and was highly unstable.
I always thought they're kind of like the futons of vehicles. They're the worst of both worlds.
Yes.
I think Julie gets the gold star of the show for
that
comment.
That's the quote of the episode right there.
Yeah, cool. We'll soundbite that together. Hoverboards.
You know, I will say, I've seen plenty of people on the road, which I don't think they should have been in a regular car.
Right, let alone a flying car. Yeah. We have hoverboards, which have been around to, it's 2015 now. Marty McFly should be showing up in October, right?
And by October, Honda will have their stuff on the market.
And we'll have to wear our metal helmets and look like Griff.
I'm wearing my pockets inside out of my jeans.
Yep, that was it.
And I'm already putting together 2 neckties.
That's right.
It's the next craze.
I like the animated GIF they have for the robot butlers. It's kind of like a robot arm Cheeto. The animated pictures, you have to click on the link in the show notes to see these pictures if you haven't seen them. It's kind of like a styrofoam or plaster head cast of a head and shoulders, and this little robot arm is just smacking this cracker or something into the face.
First, it looks like it's taking nice precision.
It's trying to line it up with the mouth.
Well, you know, clearly it doesn't understand that humans feed, or it's seen the wrong humans eating.
I do not want that robot butler in my house.
Oh, dude, if you time it just right, you get so many snacks in at once.
You'll enjoy the next one, too, about jetpacks. As a gentleman standing right at the water's edge on a nice beach with what looks like about, 16 long tubular objects strapped to his back. And he takes off, and he launches, and he goes headfirst into the water 2 feet in front of him.
This looks like the Mentos version of rocket packs, though. I think that's how they're launching it.
Yeah, right.
Now, this reminds me of the water jetpacks that do work. Those are kind of cool. You're still connected by a hose to the water.
Yes.
That's awesome. All the power is on the back.
And it propels you up out of the water.
Look, you know, looking at this, I'm thinking, okay, what was his plan for coming down to begin with?
That's why he's over the water.
Well,
I'm just saying, did you notice the Japanese captions in the picture? I just say they've got some interesting ideas. So jetpacks, still a ways away. Virtual reality. There's one dude in what looks like some kind of Zumba class. Wait, he's wearing the virtual reality and dancing unlike anybody else.
It looks like a virtual boy from Nintendo.
Oh, that could be.
He's virtually dancing better than I've ever done, though. So it's working, obviously.
It ain't Google Glass. And, of course, the driverless cars with a picture of Mr. Bean in his recliner on top of. But he's driving it with a mop handle tied to a rope around the steering wheel.
Mr. Bean, he's a genius, man.
Far ahead of his time, clearly.
Yes.
Yes.
Because he's got a driverless car. The driverless car has been a long, painful history. We've been waiting on this one since at least the 1930s, but making a fully autonomous driverless car that doesn't drive you to the ecstasy store that's safe and reliable is incredibly difficult.
We haven't made drivers, human drivers, which are safe and reliable, so I'm not so sure we can do it with robots.
That's why we need the robots, so you can't blame them for the crimes they commit.
Hey, I'm thinking when they film this scene, just the whole act of it alone had to have been nerve-wracking.
I'm thinking they accidentally built the driverless car.
Accidentally?
And then just like, we have to dismantle this or somebody's going to get, you know, sued.
Yeah. He's not strapped into this thing at all, man. That is just a frightening
two or three second scene. There's probably somebody's crouched down
by the dash.
But what if he accidentally hits the brake too hard?
Yep.
Out of the recliner, he flies off the roof. So
and Rowan Atkinson's just sitting there. Chill is nothing.
In his Mr. Bean way.
Acting, yep.
Media Corner. I call Media Corner.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the Media Corner.
Over here, get rid of this big honking ad in front of my face. What the heck, man?
You need ad block.
I want to read. And the reading goes, it says, this complaint to the editors of Marvel's Star Wars comic is wonderful in incesty hindsight. And why doesn't Darth Vader have kids? This is from the 1970s after the first, was this the book or the comics that this was commented on, Craig?
What? I'm sorry, say it again.
The books or the comic. Mad Marv sent this to us. Yes. And it came in from Mike Ryan over Twitter, and it's the article reads, Dear Archie, I love, love, love what you are doing with the Star Wars series, but may I offer one small criticism? I feel that one of the most charming aspects of the original movie's ending was in the sweet affection between Luke and Princess Leia. However, now you got to remember, New Hope or Empire wasn't out yet, so this is right after the first. However, in your comic series, they act more like young brother and sister than sweethearts. I know you can't do anything that would conflict with the upcoming sequel, but since it has already been clearly established that Luke and Leia are in love, I don't think it would spoil anything. that will be shown in the sequel if you gave a little more emphasis to the romance between them in future Marvel installments. I'm sure many other Star Wars fans would agree and be pleased to see this too. Keep up the excellent work.
Hey, even Marty McFly's mother knew there was something wrong when she kissed him. I mean, you know what? This was a chief complaint that I had about Star Wars. Like, you know, he must have made the first one not thinking it's going to go anywhere else, really. I mean, I know they said he said he had a plan for however many episodes, but I don't think something wasn't quite right because of things like this. It looked like Luke and Leia were together. And if you watch the trailer for the original Star Wars, now I know it's marketing stuff, but and somebody else probably wrote the marketing copy to go along with it, but they allude that a boy and a girl in a galaxy. And I'm like, okay, you know, so yeah, this all sets up a whole love thing.
Yeah, they never exaggerated anything in any of the promotions. I mean, that whole chest thing of Luke going and holding the lightsaber above his head,
right.
Having a chest that would envy, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger in the best of his days.
Yeah,
never exaggerated at all. I've conquered. The thing is, though, like the comment does kind of fit what you saw in the movies. The response, I think, is more interesting.
Go ahead, read the response.
The response from the publisher, who I guess was Archie. Let's see if I can do an Archie voice. As you may have noticed, with issue number 23, Arena, we haven't forgotten the romance between Luke and Princess Leia. But if pressed, we might be tempted to argue just how clearly the original film establishes them as being in love. It seems to us the film also leaves open the possibility that Lady might be interested in Han Solo.
Oh, no.
Plus, there's the added aspect of Leia's position in the Rebel Alliance, which might well complicate how she feels about being committed to anyone. Naturally, we'll be noodling around with all these possibilities, as well as some others, as time goes on. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned for episode 24.
And now they're trying to make Princess Leia look like a slut. She's noodling around.
Well, she's a woman of high position.
She keeps her options open.
It would not look good for her to be dating some, you know, rebel, some scruffy
rebel
nerf
scum.
Herder.
Rebel scum.
Well, no, scruffy nerd herder. They were nerf herder. They were trying to hook her up with the rebel scum.
Robot jockey.
Who's not responsible for anything.
Well, I would say this. I know... And I've read the comics from the original Star Wars story. And it's a lot different. Yeah, there was a comic based on the original pitch, or not pitch, but the original story. It's like, all the characters were a little different. Anakin was a different kind of person. So was Luke was a general. You know, the whole thing was kind of screwy. So I imagine there was a lot of changes, but that's pretty much something they should have kept in continuity between all three movies. I think you can't just go, he kissed her. No, they won't remember that. You know, just forget about it.
Forgot who was watching the film. People who may or may not have ever been kissed.
Yeah. Is that what it's like?
I want to be a hero too.
Hey, but if it's, by the way, it is an interesting comic. The Star Wars, it was like six issues, and it was just the original story that he had written, the first draft of everything.
Mm.
So it was pretty cool to see.
I want to go to Tashi Station.
I want to use the Force.
So did Luke.
Here in the Geek Library, we have 10 Futurama jokes that will make you smarter. We're not going to go over all of these. Julie and I did, and some of them gave us hurdy brain.
So we're going to be half as smart.
Right. We'll just give you half the
set
joke.
Up here, Craig, I think.
Some of them I think were pretty obvious. Like the general public would know
it. Not all of them were obvious to everyone, though. It was interesting who got what. So you know, the first one, in Luck of the Fryish, or Fryrish, where Professor Farnsworth says, "No fair, you changed the outcome by measuring it."
Yeah.
There's a reason that joke is a classic. The professor is referencing the observer effect, the impact of observation on the phenomenon being observed. In quantum mechanics, when we measure the state of a quantum system, we know, we Yeah, everybody knows quantum mechanics.
Yeah, they teach that in elementary school. Yeah.
Its current state and stop it from being in any of its other possible states. Because quantum mechanics, if you've read anything, you know that it can exist in all states all the time.
But by reading that, you've changed what quantum mechanics is.
Pretty screwy stuff. Number two, if you know where Cygnus X1 is, it makes it funny because at the beginning of the show, they say, what happens in Cygnus X1 stays in Cygnus X1. Why, Julie?
Because Cygnus X1 is a black hole candidate.
It's a candidate. What does it have to do to get full black hole status?
It has to get enough votes, doesn't it?
Application hasn't been approved yet.
Yeah. Like patent pending.
They can't send the application in because it keeps staying.
They're trying.
See, somebody got it. Thank you, Julie.
Now, Julie knew this one, but I did not. The theater is for Lowe's, and it looks like this kind of crazy N character plex, but it's called Aleph Nullplex.
Yeah.
And you knew what Aleph Nullplex was before this?
Yes. I take math classes occasionally.
You skipped three grades. You might have skipped this one.
Aleph Null is the lowest number of infinity. It's like adding infinitely more. Like,
this is like the one that gives
one
me hurting brain.
One plus, and you keep going.
There's an infinity before you get to infinity?
There are different sized infinities.
There's
this is
different
one of
sized infinities.
Oh, see, I looked at this picture and the joke I got was Charlie's Angels 3, The Legend of Charlie's Gold.
You missed it. The 2007 classic.
Oh, City Slickers. That's funny. That's a joke there.
They really go overboard on some of these. They're really obscure. When they're at Bender's son's bar mitzvah, the sign at the bottom says happy, and then it says LN, and in parentheses, there's a B, an ohm symbol, an ER, and then a close paren. So it would be log bomer, which is an actual holiday called log L-A-G-B-A-O-M-E-R, log bomer. Wow. And then they get into the whole taxi numbers thing and the 1729, and there are some very smart people writing for Futurama,
absolutely.
They had, I never watched Futurama that much. I started catching up a little bit, but what I remember hearing was about the math paper that they published. So in order to, the joke was there was an episode, and I'm gonna butcher it because I didn't see it, but what I understand is there was a body switching or mind switching episode. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they actually proved the math behind the punchline.
No, they had
joke.
To come up with the solution.
Well, that's what I mean.
There was a theorized answer, but they had to solve it to do this cartoon. Wow, that's too much work for a cartoon.
There's some very
cartoons
geeky
are
people.
Your mind.
Yeah, I appreciate that. They're probably too smart for me. That's why I haven't watched the show.
The only one I get is the beer that Bender drinks called Old Fortran.
Yeah.
Which reminds me, Mark, you need to sign one of those punch cards over there.
Well, actually, you know what? There's a lot of jokes in there. I just recognize it's a joke. I don't know what it actually means.
Yeah.
You
can tell it's
like
something,
that.
But.
It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's cool. They put it in there, whatever that is.
Klein's beer, St. Pauli exclusion principle girl, the Bull Moose space party, which is not mathematical, but it's more political. And the super duper symmetric string theory. Which is just funny to say, because there is a super symmetric string theory.
Neutron-encrusted, steaming hot, dark matter.
Is that some sort of coffee reference?
No, it's a poop joke.
Oh, well.
And what's thank you, Julie. That's the way we like to end these shows, with a poop joke. That takes us to the end, of which I think I'm on track 9 over here. Yes, we are. Play that funky white music.
By the way, my show notes are positioned where Isaac Asimov is peeking over the bottom of the...
Oh, we can do that, too. It's like a Kilroy was here kind of thing. Because his knuckles are just over the edge of the browser,
too. That's exactly what I thought. His fingers were sticking.
Thank you for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, as my sister once said, you can call us, send us your comments to technorama at chuckchat.com. Call the listener line at 206-222-2428. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and whatnot. Mark, where can they find you?
Principally at theweirdshow.com. You can also find many of the other things I do at encaffeinated.ca. If that's too much, encaf.ca.
Yay! And Julie, they can find you at college.
Yep, Houghton, Michigan.
In class,
come
early.
Visit, six hours away from everything else.
Tell a friend about Technorama, and until next time, give it to him, Craig.
101. That's no joke there. Just a 101.